Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
It's Tom Wilson, the host of the show.
Hello, everybody. Hi, it's Tom Wilson. Welcome back to Big Pop Fun. How about that? Thanks for being here. Well, I'm back at it. I was in the hospital, but as we know with healthcare, it's working out great now. I got sick, but I'm doing wonderfully well, and it's good to be back here, back in my office, right here, talking into a small box and imagining you there, listening to me for your own reasons, whatever they are. But they're good, which are all good reasons. Yes, here we are at Big Pop Fun, another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we sit quietly for a moment and think about health, about breathing without difficulty, about moving without pain, about having the ability to pursue our interests. Even as simple as listening to a podcast and realizing that, if we don't believe in anything beyond this, then we're so incredibly flat-out lucky we should shut our mouths in shock. And if we do believe in something beyond this, we should just open our mouths in awe. It is a magical sleigh ride, all right. And it's good to be with you. It's brought to you by my book, The Masked Man. The Masked Man by Tom Wilson. Burning off the digital shelves on Amazon and the Nook and the iPad store. Read it. Enjoy it. Review it if you care to. The podcast is also brought to you, as it always is, by art. Support the arts by buying art. There are artists all around you. Engage with them, support them. If they do something provocative, then be provoked. React to it. React to it in the way that you react to it. If they want to provoke you, be provoked. And if they can't take it, they're not artists. They're arts and crafts kiddies. They're weaklings. Come on. Don't
get me on my high horse this early into my Big Pop Fun renewal.
But these, it's my thing. Look, I love the provocative pseudo artists, who are making something that is designed to be offensive. And then when people are offended, they just go all like, well, I'm allowed to make it. Nazi censorship. No, just make it. Do it. Would you? Just live up to the art. Say, yes, I offend you. I was looking to offend you. I offended you. That's what the art is. Don't give me that to be offensive thing. And yes, you get a lot of attention in saying, but I'm allowed to. Yes, you're allowed to do it. Of course you are. My gosh. One of my illustrious movies of my illustrious career. I actually don't look at it as a career, as I've said before. I look at it as just a long series of unusual odd jobs, part-time. But I was on a set of a movie, and one of the workers, some of the workers on a movie, plenty of them, are kind of tough guys. They're big. They work with their hands. They're grips and electricians, and they run with wires, and they carry heavy ladders around and everything. So they're, they're guys with work boots and tattoos and stuff. You get the picture. And the guy on the set had a T-shirt that was, it had a slogan on the front. I won't, but it was, it was very offensive toward women. Very, sort of one of those eyebrow-raising offensive toward women to be at work in a shirt like that. But, hey, he was doing it. He wants to do it. That's his thing. He's got the work boots and the stuff. Anyway, so early on in the day, he ends up next to a very small lady who is the script supervisor. The script supervisor keeps track of what the scenes are, what scene numbers, what camera angles there have been, what part of this scene that we've shot already, all kinds of technical mumbo-jumbo that I don't pay attention to at all, but has a three-ring binder and a pencil and various squiggles in the script to show what we've done and everything. But it's a, you know, a small lady, and she just says to the man wearing the shirt, "You know, I find that shirt offensive." And it was, I mean, I loved it. But she just very simply, "I find that shirt offensive." And he didn't say, like, "Well, it's supposed to be offensive," or, "Well, it's my shirt, tough bean." He was in shock. He stared at her, silent for 3 seconds. "Well, what do you mean?" He says. She says, "Well, I mean, you've worn it in order to be offensive, and I'm offended by it. I'm surprised that you would wear it in a, you know, in a professional place. You know, I just wanted to tell you that I find it offensive." And he says, "Well, I mean, it's just a shirt. I mean, it's just a joke on the shirt. I just..." And I had to chime in and say, "What a baby." Yeah, which made every, you know, I'm so diplomatic. But I said, "What a baby. Man, you wear the shirt. You took a shower this morning. You put on the shirt saying, 'Hey, people be offended by this one,' or whatever. And you just don't care. So, and somebody, you know, a lady just had the guts to just say, 'I find that offensive.' And you just immediately go all wiggly. Well, I don't, it's just a joke. He was a provocative little baby. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Hey, speaking of sweet, provocative little babies, James Arnold Taylor is a friend of mine. He's a dear old friend, and he is a sweet, provocative little baby. And he's been a guest on this podcast twice before. I enjoyed speaking with him very much, as did a lot of you who commented on it. He's one of the premier voiceover actors in town. He works on millions of shows. He has a book out, which he will tell you about, but I recommend you going to Amazon and the ways that he will tell you to get his brand new book. And but James, we were in a conversation, and he asked if it might be possible for him to try talking to someone and seeing if it might be interesting, trying out his version of podcasting. Well, you know, I just say, "Hey, James, look, Big Pop Fun is about friends. It's about authentic conversations. And it's about, to me, you know, hey, I am not a pro. It's about experimenting. So my friends, hands of Big Pop Fun, on. Here's my friend, James Arnold Taylor, who, I recommend going back and listening to those two episodes before listening to this. You'll know a lot about James. But here's my friend James Arnold Taylor with a friend of his. I don't even know this guy. 6 degrees of, not Kevin Bacon, 6 degrees of podcast making.
It's Big Pop Fun.
Thank you, Tom Wilson. One of the dearest people in the world to me, Tom Wilson, one of the most talented actors out there, one of the most amazing artists. I have his art hanging on my walls in my home. Please support the arts, as Tom says. But you know what I say? Support Tom's art. He's great. And I am doing my best to, you know, I originally called Tom and said, "How about if I sit in like Gary Shandling used to on The Tonight Show with Carson or Jay Leno?" And he said, "No, I would think you're more like David Steinberg, who was, you know, not as well, he was fine, but I took that as whatever." So here I am doing my best David Steinberg, sitting in for Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson is not on the show. Doc is here and Doc is not here. James Arnold Taylor will be on the show. That's Johnny Carson, for those of you that don't know, because you're much too young, and I should do Jay Leno instead. Of course, we have Tom Wilson on the show. You know, it's funny. I find, since I'm doing Big Pop Fun, Tom's thing, I'm finding that my pacing is very similar to Tom, and I'm doing my Tom Wilson impression, which is right about, it's about there. I'm sorry, Tom. See, this is what happens. I'm a voice guy. I do people's voices. I'm listening to Tom's voice all the time. No, I'm not going to do any more voices. I'm going to get right to the interview with my good friend, Russ Leatherman, who is the voice of Movie Phone. Now, Russ and I go back about 20 years. Movie Phone goes back that long as well. And we'll tell you about how we came together. But Russ created this thing, Movie Phone, just him. And he tells the whole story in this interview. It's fascinating stuff. Quite the entrepreneur who turned this idea into a gazillion-dollar industry that AOL bought. And just, it's a fascinating story with Mr. Movie Phone talking about Seinfeld, movies, phones, technology, fun, right here on Big Pop Fun. You know, when we met, I didn't wear glasses.
You know what, when we met,
do you know
we were both a little different.
20 years ago that we met and started working together?
It's incredible, right?
It is.
You were the very first guy that I ever hired to do any Movie Phone stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like I was always the only guy.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Movie Phone.
Yeah.
I was the only guy. But people get sick. People have to go places. You have to go to the bathroom periodically.
Every once in a while.
And you were, I don't even remember how we got together, but I remember as of when I met you thinking, okay, this guy can do just about anything.
Thanks.
And you to this day are the only person who has ever been on Movie Phone, on the Movie Phone service, that wasn't me.
Oh, well, look at that. See?
True.
That's very cool.
It's true.
Very cool. Well, thank you. Well, I am talking with Russ Leatherman, the voice of Movie Phone, Mr. Movie Phone.
Mr. Movie Phone. You can call me Russ.
Yeah.
We've known each other long enough.
I can finally call you Russ. Well, this is great. So, you know, we're on Big Pop Fun, and I think Movie Phone is a big part of pop culture. Certainly has been.
It's a big part of Big Pop Fun.
How many years? Yeah. I mean,
25 years.
25 years.
1989, Movie Phone was created, and, yeah, and literally we are at our 25th anniversary.
Happy anniversary. And
Thank you. Later. Does anything good happen after this interview?
You'll get a souffle. And it was on a phone.
Because
people now, they go Movie Phone and it's on their phone, on their app. It's
right.
Like a Movie Phone app, or they go to their computer and they look up what's... But how did that start?
Well, it was my answer to being unemployable, really, which we've discussed in the past and you're familiar with. And so first of all, I'm going to go backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that Movie Phone, the phone service.
Yeah.
The hello and welcome to Movie Phone.
Yeah, do it. Come on. No, really do it.
No, you don't pay me nearly enough for this interview. There's a podcast, right?
Yeah, it's a podcast.
Okay,
yeah,
so you don't get that. Yeah. it was a voice that people latched onto that even today, 25 years later, there are still, now these aren't big numbers if you compare it to the website, but there are still, you know, a million people a week who are calling Movie Phone.
So it is still a
It's still there, 777 film. You still call it. I still answer it. You still hear those little studio ads in the beginning.
Oh, really? Those are the things I used to do.
The nice thing about it now versus back in the day is, of course, there's a voice recognition option. So if you just want to talk to Mr. Movie Phone, say, I want to see a movie. What do you want to see? I'd like to see Gravity. What theater? Give me your zip code.
You know, well, and does he go, are you sure you want to see Gravity?
I have in the past. In the very early days of Movie Phone, when we were just trying to figure out how it would work and if it would work, we set up this little demo system and we would have people call 777-FILM.
Sure.
And at the time, I had to go down to downtown Los Angeles. We would sort of bust into the computer, and when somebody would call, I would talk back to them live.
Oh, that must have freaked them out.
Yeah, they thought they were talking to a robot, and it's like, you've made a horrible selection. Choose a different movie. Wait, I don't like that. That sort of thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 25 years. It really is. I've spent my entire professional career, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
If you can call it that.
I think you can, actually, in this day and age.
At 25 years, you can, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully I'll get a watch.
I was about to say, some type of watch.
Yeah,
I think you should. And also, such a part of the whole of the zeitgeist, you know? I mean, Seinfeld, Family Guy?
Almost any show you could name.
So, Simpsons?
Simpsons. Ellen, the Academy Awards, Oprah.
Oprah, I was going to say Oprah.
One of the best jobs in the world on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Man.
And she's mean, by the way. I don't know if people know that.
She lives here.
Well, she's friggin' mean.
I mean...
She was on the show, anyway, to people.
And she was, really?
In the green room. She was a little mean. These celebrities that you think are just the best people in the world, and they get out and they dance on the show, and then you hear that they shake everybody's hand afterwards. That wasn't my experience.
No.
Now, I tend to rub people wrong every now and again, so maybe it was just me.
It could have been you. I find that they're all... I've never met Oprah.
She's a fine woman. She almost fired a girl in her dressing room when I was on the show for having lost an earring. She was pissed because the girl didn't like match up her earrings.
Wow.
And so,
well, I mean, you get like that. I worked with you. I remember it was like that.
It was a little bit like that. I do too. You know what? Because I was very sensitive about the Mr. Movie Phone voice. I didn't want anybody jacking that up, really.
Now, let's jump ahead a second, though, because you have reviews now.
Yeah.
In the past, it was like, oh, you can't, Mr. Movie Phone can't give an opinion.
Yeah.
He's just going to tell you.
Yeah.
He sits in his little room like Kramer on Seinfeld. And I'm a huge Seinfeld fan.
Me too.
And I was just watching that one the other night. And I was going,
I still get those checks for 32 cents.
That's nice, isn't it?
Every couple weeks, yeah.
Because that was you. If people wonder, that was actually you. And you do just a little turn, and we can see your profile there for a second when you bang on the door.
That was an amazing experience.
Cosmo Kramer.
Yeah, so yeah. Why are you taking my business? Yeah. That thing. That was an amazing experience. You know, what happened with Movie Phone is we started this service, which was a utility.
Yeah.
Which at the time, back in the day, you either called a theater and got that jangly, noise, or that repeated thing, that loop thing that would give you 18 screens.
Or like a kid. It was always like,
hello and welcome. Thank you for calling the Fiesta 5 Theater.
That's totally true.
And today...
that's exactly right. Yeah. Or you had to go... drive to 7-Eleven, get a newspaper, and hopefully by the time you either got your newspaper or got through that horrible answering machine, you hadn't missed the movie-going window, right? Like, you found out at 4:25 that the movie started at 4:15 because it was such a pain to find the information.
So you are really, Movie Phone, really kind of responsible for all of us being into this day and age of now push a button kind of
thing. I think we're responsible for almost...
almost everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Right? But there's some truth to that. There's a little bit of truth to that. We were the first people. So, okay, I'm going to take you back.
Okay.
I'm going to take you back to the beginning.
All right.
And I hope you can make
some sense of this
interview.
Yeah.
But so anyhow, Movie Phone was created out of my personal frustration of having that exact experience.
Right.
So I was sitting with a couple buddies, and we thought, well, what if you could push a couple buttons on your touch tone phone and put in your zip code, right? Like, that's doable. Computers can do that now. And so we got a guy who had a computer, started, you know, recording some prompts, took some information out of the newspaper, and started doing some data entry, and thought this might be a thing. Like, I would use this.
Yeah.
You know, this is... So Movie Phone was literally born out of my frustration of the pain of going to the movies.
Right.
And I think that's probably how many of the best ideas are created.
Sure.
Out of your personal necessity. That's exactly right. So we started this little business, this little Movie Phone business, and it was me and a couple guys, and it was our money, and we had a computer, and... you know, we thought we were going to start a business, and as you know, starting a business is very hard.
Yes.
And we had a great idea.
Yeah.
We had a good concept, but we didn't have any money.
Yeah.
You got to have money to do stuff.
You do.
I don't know if anybody's told you.
No, you need to have some money. A couple of bucks.
Yeah. So we went out looking for venture capital.
Yeah.
And we were just dumb kids. We didn't know what we were
doing. How old were you?
26, 27.
Yeah, so you're just kind of starting out. College or anything, had you done that?
I had done some, in college I had done some Top 40 radio.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Our college happened to have their own radio station and television broadcast
facility. You mind if I ask where'd you go?
The University of Idaho in Moscow,
nice.
Idaho.
Wow, Moscow.
Yeah, don't even ask why I ended up there.
That's good radio station.
Different Moscow.
Lederman.
It's not Moscow.
Oh, Moscow.
That's how we knew the tourists.
Moscow.
By the way, it was Moscow, Idaho.
Okay. Like Bosco.
Like Bosco.
Okay.
Except Moscow.
All right.
So I went to college for that stuff, and I did a little radio show at the college, so I had some experience doing it.
Right.
But when we came up with this idea for Movie Phone, I sort of started doing the voice by default. It was not that I was good by any stretch, it's that they sucked, really. And so...
You were the best you guys had.
Yeah, I was the best.
I was like, I guess Russ will work.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I was used to sort of the college-y Top 40 radio thing. So I just started, you know, winging it. It was like, hello, and hello, welcome to the movie. Press one, press two, rated R, you know, all of that
you
stuff.
You sound just like him when you do that.
Just like that guy,
amazing.
Right? So we started doing that. We had this little Movie Phone service. We had a computer. It answered two or three phone calls. We were out looking for money.
Right.
And we had set up a little office in the top of the Sunset Gower Studios in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And it had a couple phone lines literally plugged into the back of a computer in our office.
Wow.
And we were out looking for money. And anybody who's ever been out looking for money or venture capital knows how impossible it is, because everyone tells you they're going to give you the money, right? But the checks never come.
Right.
So we were at the very end of our rope. They were literally going to come shut off the couple phone lines we had running into the back of this computer. We had borrowed the computer, so we were going to have to give that back. And finally, I had a friend that worked at the Hollywood Reporter. And that person agreed to write a little article in the Hollywood Reporter about movie hotline set for Southland Bow. Just a little two-liner. And a couple guys in New York happened to get the Hollywood Reporter.
Sure.
They were in the venture capital business.
That's amazing.
And in the finance business and, in, you know, trading gold and silver and stocks and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So they called us and they said, so we hear you have a little hotline thing. And it's like, yeah, we do. Well, we'd like to talk to you about it because, you know, we're investors and we have money. It's like, yeah, I bet you are. And
sure. Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
that's good. Right. Well, because again, no one really ever has the money they say they have. So these guys, by the way, who are ended up being worth billions of dollars.
Really? Wow.
We made them fax us. And back in the day, you're sending faxes, right?
Yeah.
You need to fax us your credentials, your resume, your finances for the last year, because we've been jerked around by every person who said they were going to invest. So they said, well, let's just do this. Why don't you guys just come to New York and visit us, and we'll see if, you know, we sort of look the same way on the business. And we're like, no, we're busy, we're very tied up. And and they said, well, how about if we pay for the plane tickets?
I was going to say.
And it's like, well, let me check my calendar. Let me try to rearrange a few things. I'll get right back with you. They flew us to New York. As soon as we arrived in New York, and I'd never been to New York, they took us to the top of the World Trade Center at the time, which is a different building now, as you know. Yep. I'd never been to New York. I was a dumb kid from California. They had us look around, took us to this trading floor that they had where, you know, cha-ching, money's changing.
Guys doing the hand things.
All that stuff. Yeah, the hand signals, all that stuff. And we sat in a room for 8-10 hours. Made a deal.
Wow.
They agreed to, at the time, I think their initial investment in MoviePhone was $750,000.
Wow.
Which at the time was like a bazillion.
Sure.
You know, compared to today. And we were in business. All of a sudden, MoviePhone went from this wacky idea that me and my stoner buddy friend had to an actual real business.
And that was one of the things. It's like when I called you up and said, you know, let's get together and talk about this. Because while this day and age, it's hard to come up with something new. Still, 25 years ago, in the grand scheme of things, long time ago for you and I, because we feel old now.
We do.
Not that
long ago.
We
look good, though.
We do look good. Yeah, I mean,
if
fantastic.
You could see us now,
no idea
what's happening here.
But to encourage people that it's still doable. There's still things. There's still ideas. There's still stuff out there. It's pretty great.
I actually think it might be even easier.
Really?
It's both easier and more difficult.
Yeah.
You and I both know. And, you know, let's not pretend like I'm the only successful guy in the room.
Oh,
right?
Come on.
Like, you've done very well for
yourself.
Ladies
and gentlemen, Robert De Niro is here. No.
You've done very well for yourself.
Well, thank you.
Doing something very different than what I did.
Yeah.
But with your voice work and everything else. But back in the day, we would have to drive across town or drive from the Valley to Hollywood to go into a studio to record something to, like I said, just the initial computer that we had the movie phone service on, I think, weighed 25 pounds.
Even the stuff that I did for you 20 years ago. So I would record it in my home studio, and then I would put it on tape. And then
we would it over.
Yeah, you would have a courier service come, or I would drop it in FedEx, and it would be messaged over, and then you would have to take that, put that in your tape player, and then you'd have to make a dub of that, and you'd have to put it. I mean, it was a whole process.
It was a thing. So the blessing and the curse, and you have a young child. I have a couple grown children. My daughter goes to UCLA, and my son is into music and mixing and audio and that sort of thing. But anyone can have a studio.
Yeah.
Anyone can be famous instantly.
Yep.
If you have the right idea, you can distribute it to the world. You don't need a record company anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't need a lot of the stuff we had to have as we were coming up. With that said, there's also a lot of noise now because everybody can be famous and be a broadcaster and, yeah. and have their stuff out there into the world very quickly. So, you know, I think it's both things. It is hard to break through the noise, but you can.
Yeah.
And that sort of was the case with the movie phone story. You know, if I had a dime for everybody who told me movie phone was the dumbest idea in the world when we were first starting out.
Yeah.
Because people did. It's like, wait, you think people are going to press buttons on a phone?
That's so crazy.
When there's a newspaper right here? I have the newspaper right in front of me. Why would I ever do that? It's like, but wait, if you had this easy thing, you probably would use it.
That's the silliest thing I've ever... Darling, get me a cup of Joe, would you?
It's true.
I'm talking to Russ. He's a real swell guy. Everything's Jake.
It's totally...
I don't mind the ink on my fingers.
It's totally true.
Yeah.
But I knew early on that it had to be something more than just a utility. Whether it's a phone service or a program or an app on your iPad,
if it doesn't
have a particular smell or taste to it, and it just does something, then you lose.
Yeah, you get
because
bored
there's too much,
and people get bored very quickly. Now, I mean, you know, with your kids, it's like even my 8-year old, she'd be like, "Oh yeah, this is great. Yeah, done. Figure it out. Done."
They're so much smarter than we are.
Just like, I mean, and intuitive. She intuitively knew the first time she picked up an iPhone what to do with it.
Right.
And I'm like, how did... I guess we would have, but...
No, you may have. Not me. But so putting the personality on movie phone.
Yeah.
Making it not just a utility, but making it a thing. Making it the thing that when people would call it, they would have some reaction to it. They would either go... That's the happiest guy I've ever heard of in my life, or that is the most annoying voice I've ever heard.
Call it. Listen.
I know. Listen to this guy. Who can listen to this?
But so that's what makes a great character, though.
Yeah.
Mr. Movie Phone is a character, and it's so funny because people go, oh, you know Mr. Movie Phone? I go, yeah, well, I know Russ. Mr.
Right.
Movie Phone, he's a different guy.
Right.
He lives in the phone. And I get tapes with him. And he talks to me, but when I talk to Russ, that's Russ.
Right. He's just a guy. He's just a regular guy. But I can't tell you how many people, like, literally were shocked when they found out that I was a human.
Yeah, because it was almost computer-like.
It sounded very automated, and I did it intentionally. Breswan, Bresdu, that. I did it for a reason, so people would pay attention to it. But people would meet me, and it's like, oh, my God, look, he's a man.
And he doesn't talk like that.
It's like, I am a man. I'm a human.
Well, Kramer... Hello, and welcome to a movie. I mean, his whole kind of impression of you is funny.
Well, that's what happened, is it started catching on. It was an idea that really started getting some traction and catching on with pop culture at the time.
Yeah, I remember Ben Stiller did, we did commercials where Ben Stiller was on them and stuff.
All those guys, and a lot of it I can attribute to that infamous Seinfeld episode.
Yeah, sure.
Because I remember at the time... And this is still with me and a buddy in an office. And we used to answer each other's phones pretending we were each other's assistant. Because in Hollywood, you don't answer your own phone.
No, you can't.
You don't do that.
Right.
So it'd be like, he'd answer the phone going, Russ Leatherman's office. And and so we're sitting in our office, and sort of an office, and I hear him talking. And he's having a very weird conversation with somebody. He puts his hand over the phone, and he says to me, I have Larry David on the phone. And I didn't believe anything anybody said at the time. So I'm going, yeah, sure you do. I bet you do have Larry David on the phone. Why don't you go ahead and pop him over? I'll chat with Larry.
Yeah.
And he says, so what would you think if we took Seinfeld and we had an episode where Kramer was the movie phone guy and people were calling it? And would you guys be interested in that at all? And it's like, yeah, we'd be interested in that. That would be awesome. So we had this conversation. They put us in touch with the people at casting. They sent over a script. I got to approve the Seinfeld script. It was like, what is happening here? And I'll never forget the experience of going to the Seinfeld taping of the show.
Yeah.
And Elaine, Jerry, the entire cast, they were more excited to meet Mr. Movie Phone.
Yeah.
I was to meet them, and I loved them.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I get it.
It was such an odd experience because I was on the soundstage. It was over on. I think it was on the Sony lot.
Yeah.
But we were just there. I had pre-recorded my lines.
Oh, okay.
And they had them and everything else. So they knew, Larry David and everybody knew that my wife and I were up in the stands for this taping. So we're up in the stands, and if you've ever been on the set of a sitcom, which I'm sure you have, depending on the sitcom, a lot of stuff happens on the fly.
Yep, absolutely.
So Larry says, Mr. Movie Phone, come down here. And I'm looking at my wife, and she's like, what is he talking about? And so I get up out of my seat, and this is an audience full of, you know, what, 500 people or whatever they have at these tapings. And I walk down to the stage. All of a sudden, surrounded by writers, surrounded by Jerry and Larry David, and they start writing stuff on the fly because they realize that I'm there. I'm there to do stuff. Well, let's have them do this. What if we wrote this? And what if we did that? And I'm like, what is going on here?
That's so great.
It's the most amazing experience ever. And they were the nicest people in the world.
Yeah.
I had never been involved in anything like that before. So just to see how creative people could take something and on the fly make something that was already sort of funny much funnier.
Yeah.
And integrate me literally into the episode, which at the very end, I go knock on Kramer's door and say, why are you stealing my business? That sort of thing. Yeah. So the Seinfeld episode airs.
Yeah.
And prior to the Seinfeld episode airing, Movie Phone at the time was probably getting a couple hundred thousand calls a week, which isn't nothing.
No,
at the time, it was
good.
A lot of people calling this little wonky phone service.
Yeah.
Immediately after the Seinfeld episode, 2 million calls.
Wow.
Just instantly, to the point where we didn't have the computers to handle all of it.
Wow.
You know, the power of a television show, especially back in the day.
Yeah.
So that was an incredible experience. And I really owe a lot of the success of Movie Phone. I'm not giving them any money or anything.
Sure, no. You know what? They're okay.
They're doing okay.
They did all
that
right.
Jerry Seinfeld
they
and Larry
did
David.
Okay, yeah.
They're doing okay. But I owe a lot of the success to just that happening and the right place at the right time.
And so, but now Movie Phone has evolved because AOL, Time Warner, they came in, they bought Movie Phone. That must have been just kind of a crazy experience.
About a decade ago.
Yeah.
10 years ago. Well, it was crazy because we I was never self-admittedly, the smartest guy in the room.
Oh, come on.
But here's the thing. I was smart enough to know that I wasn't the smartest guy in the room.
That's good.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, we had people who dealt with the finances, and I had good partners, and we had taken Movie Phone public, and, you know, we had done a lot of business stuff that a company needs to do.
Right.
But then AOL shows up.
Yeah.
And they're looking to buy Movie Phone. And they buy it for an astronomical amount of money.
Yes, I remember all of that. It was public knowledge.
It was a chunk.
Yeah, it was a good chunk of money.
They bought it for a chunk of money.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was a life-changing event.
Sure.
For me, for my family, for my kids, for everybody around us, and even for, you know, the business. One of these days, when I stop being so lazy, I'm going to write a book because, you know, it was a perfect example of Movie Phone was running as a great little company, 125-person company or whatever.
Is that how many people? Wow.
But then the man comes in and buys it.
Yeah.
And you know that when you sell something to anybody listening who wants to sell or sells anything to Google or IBM or anybody, you're selling your baby to them. And you have to be prepared for whatever they do to it.
I remember many of those changes because I was still working for you then.
Yeah.
And it was very strange.
Very strange. All of a sudden, there's a corporate environment. There are people in blue suits from HR who are coming in to visit.
Yeah.
And it was all very weird. With that said, they paid me handsomely to buy Movie Phone.
Sure.
But things changed dramatically. And over the last 10 years of being, you know, continuing to be the voice of Movie Phone. And, you know, I had to evolve and I had to figure out other stuff to do. Like for me, it was to figure out what is there beyond this goofy voice.
Sure.
You know, beyond the press one, press two.
Oh, gosh, if you can tell me what's beyond the goofy voices, I will appreciate that.
But I had one goofy voice.
Yeah,
you have 1,000.
That's the difference. Okay.
I had, in fact, I wasn't a voiceover guy. I was nothing. And that was really the thing that I had to hang my hat on. So I had to figure out, what else can I do with that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I've got this place in pop culture.
Yeah.
People know me. People are familiar with me.
Right.
What do I do with that? What can I do with that now? So, like you said, I figured, you know what? People know my voice. They know movies. They trust me. They trust me to get them to the theater on time.
Mm-hmm.
They trust me to buy their movie tickets. I wonder if they'd trust me if I started telling them whether or not they should be seeing movies. So I started reviewing movies, doing a little segment on KABC TV in Los Angeles.
Right.
And I was the weirdest looking guy on the newscast. By the way, the program manager at KABC, she's still there. Why she ever put me on the air in the first place is just beyond.
Why, now, why would you say that? You're a good looking guy.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way,
handsome.
I don't look
man.
Like the other guys on the news.
No, you don't.
I don't look like them.
Because you were always very hip. You'd have like the sport coat with the T-shirt and the jeans.
The space suit, as my wife refers to it, and that mustard yellow thing that I used to wear and whatever. But she put me on the air on TV in Los Angeles, and I still do those segments today.
Yeah.
Then CNN sort of saw what I was doing and said, hey, how about you come do some reviews for CNN? And then some radio stations. And so I started taking that little kernel that I had to work with and turning it into something else, which is becoming a sort of a movie personality.
Yeah, exactly right. And I like that as opposed to just a film critic, because film critics can get a little full of themselves. Mr. Movie Phone, he's more fun. And there's no kind of BS to the six-second reviews. Now, see, that's the brilliance of that. You have Mr. Movie Phone's six-second review.
I started reviewing movies in 6 seconds.
Because you can really, literally, in this day and age, you can tell if a movie is good or bad in 6 seconds.
You can. Well, it's not only can you by sitting there for 6 seconds and you know if it's going to be god-awful or not. But, you know, we were talking about this, your daughter's attention span, my kid's attention span, very different.
Yeah.
You know, they do not want to listen to somebody drone on for half an hour on any topic ever.
I went on a road trip with these young kids. I was driving them, and it was like one of those youth kind of things as a youth. I'm being okay, I'll be the good guy driving them. And we had Sirius radio in there, and they went nuts. So they would, every 10 seconds, change. They go, oh, well, I heard the song. I go, yeah, but don't you want to listen to it? No, no, it's like I got it now.
You're right.
They start changing. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That's how you operate.
That is how they operate. And, you know, it's an ADD kind of world.
Yeah.
And so I figured if all they have access to are quotes in the newspaper from, frankly, critics that you can't trust.
Yeah.
Or these long, drony reviews.
Yeah.
How can I contribute to that? Like, how can I take the reviews that I've been doing on ABC and these 2-minute segments, et cetera, turn them into little bite-sized nuggets that people could consume? Because the truth is, as far as movies go, you don't care about reviewers anyway. You know what you care about? You care about the people you know, the people that you trust,
right,
the people that you're familiar with, and what they think about a particular movie.
Yeah, did or you some, see it? Well, I mean, but
somebody
is
like
it
you,
worth it?
Somebody you can relate to.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll
right.
never forget. I was in a screening one time, and I was with very, very famous movie critic.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know it at the time, but I'm sitting in a theater seat. He's sitting right behind me. I hear this guy talking about how he hasn't changed his mattress in like 30 years. And he's just saying the most outrageous stuff. I turn around and look at the guy, and he's got white socks up to his knees. He's got those things that hold your socks up.
Sure. Yeah.
He's just the most slobby, grossest guy ever. And somebody goes, oh, that's blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm going, what? I've been listening to that guy and reading his reviews my whole life and respected him and sort of believed everything he said. And I can tell you, after seeing him, I will never, ever, ever listen to another word he says because I would never hang out with that guy.
It's a different plane. It's not, this is not your people.
So I figured if I already had some popularity, if I was the guy, and you know, believe me, I've got as many. Maybe not as many, but I've certainly got detractors too.
Oh, sure.
Right? Like, a lot of people like my stuff.
You have to.
Plenty of people who hate my stuff.
Sure.
But for the people who know me and trust me and know my taste in movies, like my taste in movies, right now, if you're at a movie theater or if you're at home, you can just watch a 6-second review or 2 or 3 of any particular movies you want and know what you should go see.
Well, case in point, I do listen to them and I do take your word for it because we know each other. And so I know we have the same sensibility, but I do think that that's a valid point that if people went to Movie Phone all that time, they do go, yeah, it's Mr. Movie Phone. That's nice. It's good. And you have a different, now see the voice.
I took advantage of Mr. Movie
you
Phone.
Did take
that's really
advantage,
what I did.
Yeah. But, and he's changed a little though on these.
Yeah.
He's kind of crazy. He's like, hey,
yeah,
I'm doing you.
Well, he's always been kind of crazy.
Yeah. He's a little nuts, but now
and it's
he's
very
like,
funny.
I've got 6 seconds. I really got to cram it in.
I got to get that done quick. And it's a Twitter world. Yeah. Right? It literally. Yeah. And I believe me, I did this before Vine showed up.
Yeah. That's right. 6 seconds on Vine.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is sort of that 140 character world. And it's very interesting because, like you say, hopefully my speaking voice isn't as grating as my movie phone voice. You know, you'll know when you see that two people actually survived this interview on the internet.
Oh, come on.
But I'm starting a new syndicated radio show.
That's great.
And we're putting it together right now.
Wow.
And it's very funny because I really don't know how to just be a regular guy. It's hard for me to just talk like a normal human being when there's a microphone in front of me, because for 25 years, it's been like, hello, you should do this. What are you thinking? What are we doing? Yeah. And like the people who are like mixing this thing are going, dude, you got to calm that down. Right? The people don't want to listen to that for an hour. But it's very weird for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can relate in that voiceover has changed in the last 25 years, since we're on this quarter of a century thing here. It's like, you know, when I started, it was announcers. So let me tell you about this.
And right.
It's all right in here. And then it became, you know, the kind of the Carl's Jr. thing. We don't really, you know, hey.
It's totally like the slobby, lazy,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's even different than that. They're kind of mushmouth. It's kind of this, I don't know, what do you want? I'm just kind of.
They're not even words.
They're not, yeah. There's really no technique to it
just
anymore.
A string
now.
Of syllables.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's new Honda, buy it, you know, whatever.
It's totally true. And that, and I'm sure that that's been interesting for you,
because it's hard
as I was saying sort of throughout the course of Movie Phone, in order to stay relevant and employed,
sure,
I have had to adapt and had to change and had to find something new,
yeah,
to do with the tool that I had.
Well, I think your regular speaking voice, this right here that we're doing, just fine.
This is good.
This is great.
But you know what's weird?
Huh.
I can't do this. Like, even like if you weren't here, and maybe we just learned something. Because when I was trying to,
maybe I need to be there for the show.
You might need to be there for the
show.
That'd
be good,
because when I was recording the, you know, the intros and the outros and those kinds of things, I swear to God, if I'm not talking to somebody, I'm talking like this. Hello, and it's an interesting process.
I've
no doubt.
Probably edited more of your voice than just about anybody.
I'm sure you have,
because for many years, I mean, I worked for you for. At
a
least
decade?
10 years. Yeah, at least 10 years.
And by the way, you know, were right there at the beginning of the 6 second reviews.
Yeah,
too,
yeah.
Helping me put my beds together, helping me figure out what to do with that, with all that. You've literally, I may owe you some money, frankly.
No,
I might owe you a little something.
This is my favorite. So if you're like, okay. Hello, James. I'm going to give you these here in a minute. Hello.
Hello. Hello. I know, right? It's not easy. It's not easy.
You don't
being
need
Mr.
to
Movie
work
Phone.
That hard. Just relax.
Just
it's
do
fine.
It.
Just do it. It's
yeah.
fine.
Well, we're going to see. We're going to see with this new show how that works out.
Well, we see that in syndication.
Syndication. And it is, you know, at this point, I've been lucky enough with my career that, you know, and this was kind of the brainchild of my son. He said, Dad, you love music and you love movies. Why don't you put those two things together?
Now, see, okay, and that's great, because that is one thing that I keep thinking of in this. And you started Movie Phone because clearly you like movies.
Nope.
You don't like movies?
Well, I didn't at the time.
Oh, really? Okay, no, but I mean,
by the way, this may be the first time this has ever been said in any sort of public forum.
Not that
form.
Big on movies. Yeah.
You know what?
Do you like movies?
I do like movies. And I've come to love movies because they've become my career. But I will tell you, in the beginning, I was just looking for a hook.
Yeah.
I was just looking for anything, any white space that needed to be filled. And it happened to be in a goofy movie phone hotline.
So,
it had nothing to do with my love of movies.
Like, you know, because I grew up very much a product of movies. Movies are what created my,
really?
What I do.
I didn't know that.
And cartoons, all that stuff. That's, I am what I am. I'm a byproduct of being put in front of the television. I was, you know, kind of a, what do they call it? Latchkey.
Kid. Yeah. So, but I was a much bigger TV guy than I was a movie guy.
So like with TV, what were you watching?
Oh, I was talking to a radio station this morning. You know what I was doing? I was faking being sick.
Yeah.
Staying home.
I would do that.
And and I was watching some I Dream a Genie.
And
some Flintstones.
Yeah, but David,
now you're here with Fred Flintstone. How weird is it?
That's incredible.
Would you have ever known back when we were doing the commercials for Viva Rock Vegas?
Viva Rock Vegas?
That was the worst. The guy movie that was ever. Doing the, you know, the little playing at the beautiful Robledo Plaza at
right.
the end.
It was actually Fred Flintstone.
Would become Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, it was incredible. So and I was like you. I was much more of a TV guy.
Yeah.
And so movies just became a thing. It became my career.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I knew I was an ex-musician.
Okay.
So
what'd you play?
I played drums and sang.
Oh,
I was
okay.
in a band for a couple years before I went to college. And Mom said, "God, please go to college." So it was funny because, and it's advice I give to my son as he's trying to develop his career
sure.
and figure life out. You know, I just had to get in the funnel. And here's what I mean by that. You never know exactly what you're going to be doing. Very
right.
few people do.
Sure.
I do. There's the occasional weirdo that says, "I'm going to be this."
I knew.
Or
from
I'm
4
okay.
years old, I knew I wanted to do voices.
And you're a weirdo.
But that's, yeah. I mean,
and you're a weirdo.
What the job is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
For me, it was, you know, music was my first love.
Right.
And I wanted to be a professional musician, but I went on the road with the band for a couple of years. It
yeah.
was hell. It was a nightmare.
Really?
And I figured I don't have the stomach for this. Well, as you can see, I'm very clean and tidy, and that didn't
yes.
that didn't go over well in the rock world.
No.
But then when I started Movie Phone and then started doing a little TV and started doing a little radio,
yeah.
I literally used to gauge how successful I was
uh-huh.
by how many times a week I was putting on makeup.
Huh.
I knew if I was putting on makeup 2 times a week or yeah. 3 times a week for television appearances or whatever,
yeah.
that I was doing okay.
Uh-huh. You didn't need makeup for this, by the way. I'm a little uncomfortable, but it's okay.
Okay. But it was that same sort of scratching the same itch that music used to do for me. So yeah. when I say to my son, you know, you love music, you like movies, you're into production, you're into this, you're into that, you just need to get in the funnel. You
yeah.
know, you need to get in the top of that thing. Something's going to plop out the bottom. You don't
yeah.
know exactly what that's going to be.
Right.
Just get in the funnel.
And you find out when you're like 30-something, you go, "Oh, this is it.
This is what I'm doing."
Yeah.
You know, I'm a producer on a TV show, or I'm
yeah.
mixing music, you know, for Metallica or whatever.
And it is tough now because your son, Hollywood, you guys are out in Los Angeles and all primarily.
Yeah.
And that's a tough place. Because that's what everybody wants to do. But then you go, "But I actually have ability, and I actually was raised in it."
Yeah.
That should mean something more.
It
know?
Should. It should, but it doesn't. What it means is you just have to work super hard.
It almost means that you have to work harder because people go, "Oh, yeah, but yeah, you're Mr. Movie Phone's kid."
That's exactly right.
It's like, well, guess,
and,
yeah,
and, in,
so?
And in fact, I will tell you that my son
yeah.
uses his first and middle name and doesn't even use
wow.
my last name
wow.
in Los Angeles because he is bound and determined to become a self-sufficient
pretty
young
good,
man
though.
On his own on yeah. his own
like yourself
and merits. Yeah, like myself.
That's pretty great.
It is pretty great.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like you say, I'm in Los Angeles, but I think you've got the best idea, which is, do people know where you're
yeah,
at?
We see we're in an undisclosed location in Santa Barbara.
In
yes.
Santa Barbara, California.
Yes, Santa Barbara, because I was born and raised here in Santa Barbara and spent 17 years in Los Angeles working for the man, you.
The man.
And then came back.
You know, I was never the man.
You were never the man.
I was taken
no.
over by the man, and I sort of acquiesced to the man. I was never the man.
Yeah, no, it was you were fun to work with. And I did the names of just about every theater, like parking. So I was the, yeah, you said I was the other voice on there. So I was the friendly
dude,
voice.
Dude, you
yeah.
did all the bold
yeah,
I didn't want to
yeah.
do.
It was. I remember when that all came in, and I'm thinking, well, that's okay. But yeah, he's not going to sit here for 5 hours going, "The beautiful Arlington Theater, located on State Street, just past La Cumbre." You know, I mean,
that's
gonna,
where I drew the line.
Yeah,
it is
gonna,
where I drew the line. I figured, you know what? I'm going to give a movie title and a showtime, and then I'm going to have Movie Phone Junior do
hi,
do the
press one.
I know, right?
I didn't do a voice.
No, you were just you.
I was just me.
But you are. It's hard. Actually, hard to tell who you are.
That was one of the only times I was just me, though. Because most of my work now is doing other people.
Yeah.
If it's on, if I'm on Fox, it's
Animation Domination, or you know,
wow,
and
that's you.
Yeah, that's me.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
Wow, you're making some great.
The Simpsons.
Wow.
Family Guy.
All the shows you've been.
I want to pay you a little compliment because when you were doing like the Movie Phone voice,
yeah.
the parking lot announcements,
yeah.
and those sorts of things, like you were getting a little uppity. For a while, like right, like you and your handlers, it would be like, "Oh, right. where are you? James is busy. He can't do your take a left at the you know this and once I started becoming aware of what you were doing, And you actually had a career that was working. I was like, wow, I can't believe he's doing it. I swear to God, over the last 25 years, you have continually amazed me with the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, as a voice actor, you do kind of, you go on the sidelines a lot of times. People don't know it. And you have to kind of tell people, no, I'm okay now.
It's actually a job.
I'm a Jedi Knight. I'm Obi-Wan. I'm in movies. So this would be great. In 2015, Ratchet & Clank, the movie, will be coming out. And Ratchet & Clank is based on a video game that I've done for about 11 years now. And I'm Ratchet. I'm the main character. So I will be in the starring role of a CG 3D animated feature film. This will be my third animated feature film that I've been the lead characters in. And you will be reviewing my movie at some point. That'll be fun. It better be good, though.
That'll be fantastic. Yeah. I think the last one I did was, you were maybe a Ninja Turtle or something.
Oh, Ninja Turtles,
you?
TMNT.
Yeah.
I think you thought it was okay. And then Clone Wars.
I thought you were okay.
Yeah. Did the Clone Wars movie, the Star Wars movie, did you review that one?
Absolutely. It's funny, though, right? It's funny that two guys with dissimilar personalities, talents, managed to take a voice thing and make it work.
Yeah, that's what I think is a fun episode in this, is that we're both doing the same thing, but yet we're doing very different things. And we both have had great success in it and just want everybody to leave
us alone.
So let's
just talk about us being successful for a while.
Isn't it great?
Because people like that. Isn't it great?
That? Isn't it just fun? Do you ever just sit, like, put all your money out and just roll around in it?
It's actually very, it's interesting to me because I try not to do that. In fact,
absolutely.
I try to live a reasonably modest lifestyle, and it is interesting, and you're going to find this with your daughter. It is interesting raising children and them growing up, and believe me, I was never a huge big celebrity, and it's not like people are stalking. Well, actually, people were stalking, that's a different story. But it's interesting as a young person growing up in the shadow of that and trying to figure out how to navigate.
It
that.
Is. Yeah, my daughter, although the benefit my daughter has is she's a bigger ham than I am.
Really?
So when we
she's
go to
adorable,
Disney,
by the way.
Yeah. We'll go there and she takes over. So they're just like, "Oh, well, she's here, great." And James, you're fine.
So what's going to happen when my son and your daughter have literally no mechanism for earning a living? Right? Because when we sold MoviePhone to AOL and it was all over the news and all the big numbers and everything else, people were like saying to my son, "So what does your dad do?
Yeah.
What does he do?" He says, "Well, he's the voice. He's Mr. MoviePhone."
Yeah.
They're going, "Yeah, but what does he do?" And he's had a hard time explaining. They still have a hard time.
My mother-in-law, I don't think, still knows exactly what I do.
I'm sure she doesn't.
Yeah.
So you're running drugs. You are running drugs out
no,
of this little
No, he's a mini-weed. You see the little mini-weed commercial? That's him. Yeah, but you can't.
Is that true? Are you a mini-weed?
Yeah, I am a mini-weed.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good, right?
That's pretty good.
That is one of the ones that most people, they go, "Oh, Obi-Wan Kenobi, that's cool, Leonardo the Ninja Turtle, that's neat. You're a mini-wheat?" And then they for some reason, I'm the strawberry mini-wheat. And I say I'm the only guy man enough to be the pink.
You're the strawberry mini-wheat.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's it. But I literally was somewhere last week and somebody said, "So is the voiceover thing, are you still doing that? Is that working for you?" It's a job.
Well, it's a job. It's a job, but let me tell you something. We are two of the luckiest people in the world.
We absolutely are. And we're joking here about the success because
no, we're not really. The success is real. But the truth is it is so hard to crack into the business.
It is.
And it takes luck and persistence and the tenacity of an alligator.
And it does take knowing people sometimes.
And it takes and it takes friends. And I say that to my son all the time because there are a couple people, two specifically, that I can point to in the trajectory of my career and look at them and go, "That person was responsible for me getting to the next phase."
Yeah. Well, can I tell you something?
Please.
I was only able to buy my first house because of you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Seriously.
Wow.
That house, that was the house that Allison, my wife, and I called the house that MoviePhone was able to buy for us.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great to hear.
Yeah, and it's not like that was like millions of dollars.
South Central, but
At the same time, because of that work, we were able to put that aside and then buy a house. It was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, look at you now. You're in Santa Barbara. For God's sakes. Uh-oh. I'm getting a call. Hang on.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to MoviePhone. Showtimes are 5:45.
Yeah. I must get old. Every
5:45, 6:30. Yeah, the calls just keep coming in.
Anything to wrap up? Anything now? Do you want to plug anything?
Do I want to plug anything? Moviephone.com.
Yeah.
Still one of the most popular movie websites in the world. The phone service.
You can buy tickets on there.
You can buy tickets. You get my 6-second reviews. 6secondreviews.com. Okay. Of course. Download the apps.
Yep.
Still the best, easiest way to get to the movies.
It is. I use it every time I go to the movies.
I love you for that.
Yeah.
And stay tuned. Listen to, check your local radio station soon for my new syndicated radio show.
All right.
That I'm doing just because I want to.
Okay. Well, excellent. And so now, Mr. Movie Phone never says goodbye to you really on the phone, does he?
No. He says,
"Thanks for calling.
It's Big Pop Fun."
Well, thank you again. James Arnold Taylor here, signing off, handing it back to Tom. Do want to thank you so much. Go to jamesarnoldtaylor.com and check out my new book, JAT 365. That's James Arnold Taylor 365 Days is what that stands for. And it is a daily reader. You get this, and it's each page has a little inspirational thing for you. It takes like 10, 15 seconds. You pick that up. You look at it each day. You wake up, keep it on your nightstand. And you go, what does James have to say to inspire me today? I'm like that best buddy that has always got something happy and good to say for you. And, you know, some people find that annoying. I hope you don't. I hope you would go and check out my book. It's on Amazon.com, JAT365, CreateSpace.com, JAT365, or JamesArnoldTaylor.com, JAT365. At my website, if you go to my website, it is a little cheaper. Shh, okay? So, JAT365, hope you check it out. It's a lot of fun. And thank you, Tom Wilson, for letting me try this little experiment in podcasting. If you liked what I did, well, tell Tom, hey, have James back every once in a while, you know? Anyways, okay, I'm going. It's a lot of fun. Bye-bye. Take it away, Tom.
Hey, did you miss me? Yeah, it's Tom again. Thanks to James Arnold Taylor. That was fun. He's a PIT. He's a podcaster in training. And I hope you had fun. I hope you had fun listening. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Emily Wilson for helping produce. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist. Thanks to McPherson Guitars for helping me on the live show. I'm back out there. So come out and say hi. Hey, thanks for listening. Buy my book, The Masked Man, buy James's book, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.